Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since pineapples. And you listen to Therapy Speak right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I welcome Karen Irwin, specialist nurse and service manager, where we discuss incontinence. Hi Karen, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me onto the show and to speak to you today.
Thank you for coming
on.
It's been a busy week. How's the week been?
Oh, I've had a good week. It's always a busy week working at Bladder and Bowel UK, but it's been a good week, yeah.
Does it get more busy coming up to Christmas usually?
I think we have peaks and troughs throughout the year, you know, and I think, you know, we've found that there is very rarely any quiet time, certainly to the helpline services, you know, because we're there for adults, children and young people and the families and those that care for them. So I think there is a constant there.
Which I can totally understand. Karen, tell us a bit about yourself before we start, about how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So I'm a specialist nurse. I've worked in the field of continence now for 25 plus years. I think my background was community nursing. And I think that's where I developed a real passion for continence, or as we call it, bladder and bowel care now. And I've worked in NHS bladder and bowel services and continue to work in the NHS and also work for Bladder and Bowel UK. So it's a dual type role. And it's a really rewarding role, because bladder and bowel issues are something that affects so many people, not just those that are suffering themselves, but maybe those that are looking after people with bladder and bowel issues as well.
Of course. Karen, what would be great is if you give us a little bit of a definition about incontinence, what exactly it is.
Yeah, so incontinence is that involuntary loss of whether it be urine or sort of the bowel incontinence kind of thing. But like I say, so much can be done to actually treat and manage incontinence. I think it's something that we shouldn't be putting up with, and we should be encouraging people to step forward to seek help and advice, really.
No, of course. And I know, I mean, I've spoken to people where they have challenges with incontinence and, you know, they can feel uncomfortable about it, kind of thing, you know, but we'll talk more about that very shortly.
Yeah.
I know there's been research about incontinence. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of research done both within and sort of health services and, you know, the project, the campaign that we're working on. But I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, bladder and bowel problems are not uncommonly affect adults, children and young people. And I think having bladder and bowel health is an essential to everybody's individual well-being and overall health at any stage of life kind of thing. And I think in general terms, it's estimated that about 14 million people in the UK can suffer with a bladder problem, and an estimated 6.5 million adults can suffer with bowel problems. And along this, I think it's important not to forget the children, with 900,000 children and young people experiencing bladder and bowel issues. And, you know, in men, there's been sort of research shown that about 61% of men in the general population experience lower urine retract symptoms. But I think the important thing is that incontinence is often seen as a female problem. And there's a risk, therefore, that maybe male continence needs aren't always seen in the same light. And it's also widely acknowledged in the health literature that there tends to be less guidance, maybe less research focusing on male continence issues, despite it being a really relatively common issue. And then I think to add to this, we've got this increasing ageing population, and therefore maybe a likelihood that male incontinence is potentially likely to increase, and therefore that needs addressing as well. And I think in terms of males, it's been suggested that urinary incontinence affects about half as many men as women, but the difference becomes more, maybe less marked in the older groups, because male incontinence is more stronger in that age relation, with maybe one in three men experiencing bladder problems. But I do think we've got to view these figures with caution, as we know that there is an underreporting amongst males of incontinence. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that boys adolescent males, and younger men can also be affected. And I think now is the time to really increase that attention on an understanding of male incontinence. And I think in terms of a recent survey that was undertaken, which included over 900 men by Initial Washroom Hygiene, and this was about gauging their views, maybe the personal experiences, how they manage, and if their needs are met. And it raised questions, is enough being done to support men experiencing incontinence?
You know, children, so children and teenagers can experience incontinence as well?
Yes, so it's not just adults. And I think certainly from a Bladder and Bowel UK sort of service, that's why we cover adults, children and young people. I'm an adult nurse, not a paediatric nurse, but we do have paediatric nurses. And out in their NHS, there will be paediatric continence, bladder and bowel nurses, as well as the adult services as well.
Because when you mentioned children, teenagers, etc., I always thought it was more adults that experienced that. Mm-hmm. What are some of the causes for the young experiencing incontinence?
Again, that can be a variety of things, and it's not my great area of expertise, children. But you know, there are a number of factors that can sort of cause that. And I think again, it's about if a child is experiencing any bladder or bowel health issues, that you know, the advice is, you know, is suck to actually look at what's causing it and what treatment and management can sort of assist there.
Oh, gosh, no worries. That's very unfortunate. I don't know, it's my ignorance, I suppose. As a nurse, are you surprised? Excuse me. As a nurse, are you surprised by any of these findings?
No, I suppose is the simple answer. And I think, you know, men reported in the survey that, you know, the effect on the quality of life, how incontinence has that effect on the quality of life and how it may restrict the life. So, for example, it might be that they're not going out. They might be avoiding social situations, might be avoiding going to work or taking time off work. It sort of casts that wide net of having such an impact on individual. I think not being able to openly talk about their bladder or bowel issue also came to light in the survey. And I think, you know, we already know that bladder and bowel issues can be taboo. But I think in this survey, it was highlighted that the men felt that they weren't even able to talk to it about those that were closest to them, whether it be a spouse, a partner, or a close friend, a colleague. They just weren't able to talk about it. And I think this having to plan all the time, the fact that if somebody, you know, if they've got a continence issue, that they might need to take a pad out, they might need continence supplies or products to manage that bladder or bowel problem. And I think that then leads us to that, well, if we're away from the home environment, how do we actually manage things? And, you know, that worry of accessing adequate washroom, toilet facilities, you know, whether that be in the public domain or whether that's in the workplace. So there's all those worries going on, you know, to actually sort of manage this away from the home environment. And I think in the survey as well, while some did report adequate facilities were available at work, I think the survey actually highlighted that 17% of men felt that facilities were adequate. The rest of the men felt their needs were simply not being, you know, met. And I think this confirms what we've suspected and will help us really to continue further to campaign on a national platform to raise these issues that men with continence issues face, because this is bladder and bowel. I think sometimes we think of it just being a bladder issue, but there can be a bowel incontinence issue as well, and it can be both as well. So I think it's important that, you know, that this survey has been important along with the national research that's done in confirming that.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've spoken to people before about incontinence and, you know, I get the impression that people feel embarrassed. You know, it's something that causes a lot of anxieties because they really, if they want to go out, firstly, some people limit where they go. And secondly, some people will take precautions, but then, I mean, some people don't really want to wear pads because it basically interrupts their dignity. because all, you know, all these years there's been no issues, and all of a sudden, due to it could be age or health problem, the person now has to rely on, you know, pads or just being around a toilet quick enough to be able to, if they need it, basically, or basically going, you know, not drinking too much a number of hours before they go out. And it's soul, that's soul destroying, isn't it?
But it's like they're not uncommon things, are they? They're not uncommon things. And we hear this, whether it be on the helpline or whether we're out in clinical practice, that people will avoid drinking, or they'll not eat if they're going to an appointment if they've got a bowel sort of issue kind of thing. And, you know, those are sort of the management strategies that people have to put into place to actually try to manage. And I think what we've got to try and do is unravel all that, to look at what treatment and management can we do to try and sort of hopefully treat and what have you, but you know, at the or not best manage, you know, best manage the symptoms.
I mean we've mentioned a few things already, but you know, from your perspective, are there many reasons why, you know, men are still living with health conditions in silence, basically, and not, you know, are preferring maybe just to keep things to themselves?
Yeah, I think there's a number of factors, really. And I think, you know, is it because, could it be potentially because there's maybe low public awareness on male incontinence in itself? You know, I think especially amongst younger men, you know, it's not something that's going to happen to me. And, you know, it's something that happens to other people, or lack of male health promotion strategies. And I think, you know, I think as we said earlier, there's lots of information out there for women and on female incontinence. But do we really need to be raising that profile, getting more information to raise awareness and break down that taboo, you know, and signposting men to the right services? Because I think, as I said, we receive a significant amount of calls to our helpline services each week, whether that be telephone or sort of email correspondence regarding bladder and bowel health. And I think in that, it might be that, you know, not everybody's aware that, you know, services exist. It might be, like you say, there's that embarrassment about, you know, going to the toilet for any one of us is a private thing. So opening up and talking about that is important. There might be that there's a thought that there's an inevitability in part of aging, and that's not always the case. So I think we've got to break down these taboos and barriers and sort of take out messages that, you know, that much can be done for male incontinence or male bladder and bowel health to treat and manage symptoms rather Absolutely. Than putting up with it. And I think not suffering in silence, you know, and I think this is where when we speak to people on the helpline, you know, we will encourage people to seek that advice, you know, that it's really important they do speak to the GP or the health professional to start that journey of going forward to get the right treatment and assessment, you know, going forward. And I think also it's really important, Gavin, just sort of going back to the sort of the younger age, that we shouldn't underestimate the peer pressure on boys and the needs that younger people may have, because I think any difference is challenging for teenagers to deal with. But the difference in an area such as bladder and bowel, which is already seen as a taboo and embarrassment, can be even more difficult. And for example, some might have been told that they would grow out of the problem as they get older, or they were, when they were younger, they might have had treatment, both of which might have, you know, which might not have worked. But then that sort of reinforces the thinking that, is there any treatments available? No, there's not. I've tried treatment and it's not worked. So I think it's really important that we engage and we, you know, we ask the right questions and we get people to, you know, step forward and seek the right help and advice.
No, 100%, absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, I mean, Karen, what types of health issues exacerbate incontinence? I know, well, let's keep age out of it, because I know, I'm sure we all know, unfortunately, some men may experience incontinence due to age. Are there predominantly some health conditions that can cause incontinence
as well? So there are sort of risks, shall we say, kind of thing. So, you know, from a bladder point of view, it might be a urinary tract infection, you know, it might be neurological disorders, prostate problems, stroke and diabetes. And certainly from a bowel point of view, for fecal incontinence, there could be diarrhea, neurological problems, pelvic radial therapy, you know, sort of bowel impaction, you know. So, you know, there is a number of things. And I think this is why it's so important that people get the right assessment, and that individual assessment, that is so, so important, because there might be, it's a bit like a jigsaw, there might be lots of things that are together, you know, sort of contributing kind of things. So that's to me why the assessment is key to get to the right people to look at that, because I think, you know, people may sort of, you know, men may sort of experience urgency where they're having to dash to the toilet and really, you know, rush to the loo and not be getting there on time and getting that leakage. And that can also be from a bowel point of view as well. Or it might be feeling that sudden intense desire to pass urine and again, not making it to the toilet. There might be that involuntary leakage of urine and on physical exercise, coughing, lifting something heavy. Or it could be maybe a dribble after passing urine. So there's lots of different symptoms that people may, you know, present with. And then there can be other things like increased frequent visits to the toilet, getting up lots of times during the night. So I think, again, this is where, you know, having that right assessment, having all the questions asked, can formulate the right treatment plan for an individual to work out what is it that's, you know, sort of contributing or causing the issue. And then that can direct the right treatment and management plan.
No, that makes a lot of sense. What do you think would help to get men talking more about some of the challenges?
I think, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, in the work environment, for example, we spend a lot of time at work, whatever our work environment is, whether it would be a person sitting in the next desk to you or somebody down on the factory floor. But I think people will privately manage the bladder or bowel health condition. And I think, you know, raising awareness of bladder and bowel health is really important. But I think, you know, not everybody necessarily wants to disclose that they've got a bladder or a bowel health problem. And I think privacy is really important. I think the key thing is making sure that they've got the right facilities are there to support people with, you know, bladder and bowel sort of issues kind of thing. So I think, you know, it's important, for example, that the right washroom facilities are there to sort of provide dignity for everybody kind of thing. And, you know, schools could potentially do the same for children, for boys in schools, regardless of gender or need, and just ensuring that people have access to the right washroom facilities when they need them at a time that they need them. And I think, you know, certainly from, you know, in the workplace, you know, there's occupational health professionals where that's available, but not everybody has those services attached to the workplace. So again, I think the key is that it's privacy is important to these issues, but I also think about getting the message out there. So whether we need to be, you know, sort of out in the community, getting more messages out that male incontinence is something that is there. Male incontinence is something that is not uncommon, and actually that something can be done to treat and manage it. I think that's a really important message to get out there. And I think, you know, like I say, incontinence is like any other health condition. You know, I think it needs to be managed and less stigmatized. And, you know, privacy is really important for the individuals, as are the right facilities to support them.
It's almost like an advocate would be useful, isn't it? Almost, isn't it? Like someone that the person can talk to act on their behalf if they're feeling like, maybe, I suppose people and men generally, they could talk to, if not a friend, maybe a relative or a partner, almost, yeah, to act on their behalf, isn't it? Just to kind of, as a conduit, as a person in the middle, if they feel, yeah, too uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, maybe women will talk more openly about it because there are times that it's thought that women
are stronger.
No, but, you know, we often sort of think maybe, you know, childbirth, menopause, these are times when women may, it's not inevitable, but may experience issues. But, you know, so that's different to sort of the males, and I think it's trying to sort of get males, like you say, to open up. But I think the important thing is if they don't know, that they might think that they're alone, that this doesn't happen to anybody else, you know, I'm the only one out there, this is not a problem that commonly affects men. And I think we've just got to maybe get the message out that actually this is something that, you know, affects everybody, you know, as we've said earlier on, kind of thing, it goes across all ages. You know, but it's really important that we somehow get that information out there that, you know, it is a problem that commonly affects men.
Of course. And also, I mean, just letting people know that there is an assessment that can take place. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that don't know that such an assessment exists. And you're right. Mm. Some people may kind of isolate themselves and think, oh, am I the only person that's experiencing this, you know, when actually they're probably not. And even talking to like-minded people, other people which are having similar challenges, I mean, I think that would help men open up more, you know.
Yeah. And some organizations obviously have patient support groups and that. So there's, you know, to me, there's lots of, you know, organisations that are out there to sort of help people, you know, as well as the NHS services, you know, and I think that's important, you know, for men to be able to access, kind of thing, and knowing that there are, you know, different, because, you know, not everyone is aware that there are a variety of specialist bladder and bowel NHS services, for example, and, you know, they're often community based. And then you've got those more specialist hospital services. But then there's also those third sector organisations. We're obviously one of those, working around those issues, kind of thing. And like I say, each will offer, you know, different sort of services, whether that be, you know, sort of advice, information, or whether it is forums or support groups, you know, and those may be done remotely or may even offer face-to-face, you know, support groups. So there's lots going on out there. And I think the really important thing is that it's very much a sharing world, the bladder and bowel world, that, you know, if somebody comes to our charity, we would still signpost to others, because it's about getting that individual to the right place to get that support. And that might mean a couple of, you know, sort of other services as well, you know, and that is so really important for people.
Of course, absolutely. Having those services out there that people can reach out to is absolutely crucial. And it kind of starts with, I'm guessing it will all start with the GP, isn't it? And so if someone feels they've got confidence to come forwards, the first person they'll talk to, and usually sometimes, especially if they've known the person, the GP, for absolute years, you know, you have some people have known the GP for like 10, 20 years. And, you know, I think it starts there basically, where someone can approach their GP about the situation.
Yeah.
The GP will refer them for an incontinence assessment. I'm guessing it would go down that direction.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think it is, you know, I think it's also seizing opportunities as well, because I think from, you know, it's important for us to highlight that any changes, any concerns in bladder or bowel, you know, health or habit, that definitely needs, you know, sort of flagging up to the GP. And I think it's really important not to put off that seeking of help or advice, and to get checked out. And that might be for the individual or somebody who's being cared for, because I think if things are ignored, yes, it may sort of settle, but problems might not always get better on their own, and with time might actually get worse. So it's really, really important. But I also think it's about, you know, maybe sort of health professionals seizing other sort of opportunities and times when maybe there is an engagement, and sort of feeling, you know, confident to have those discussions and open conversations, you know, and ask the questions, and know where to signpost to, know which services to signpost onto as well, kind of thing. So I think it's not just the GPs. I think certainly all health professionals have a part to play in sort of helping men with you know, bladder and bowel incontinence issues, kind of thing. Because, you know, I think we all come into contact with people at different whether it's a general health check or whether somebody's going in for treatment. You know, there's lots of different times when we're going to come into contact with people. So I think it's also seizing that, as well as, you know, like I say, encouraging people to step forward. And like I say, they will then be able to then go forward for that bladder and bowel or continence assessment kind of thing.
Of course, of course. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So Karen, for anyone who may not know the signs of male incontinence, what are they?
So it might be that, like I say, I think we touched on this earlier, that, you know, they've got sort of urgency, dashing to the toilet. So that might be for the bladder or for the bowel. And they've just got this sudden and compelling desire to dash there and might not reach the toilet in time and then have a leakage. It might be that they have this sudden desire to pass urine. And, you know, again, you know, sort of on reaching the toilet, that can lead to incontinence. And it might be that, you know, that they've got this involuntary leakage, and that might be, you know, if the lifting or sort of coughing, you know, if they've got a cough or what have you. And then again, sort of if there is a, you know, when they've passed urine, there may be a dribble afterwards and leakage afterwards. And I think, you know, these are all things that should be sort of addressed and looked at and not ignored. You know, if somebody's got a urine infection, that may sort of lead to them, you know, having incontinence issues as well. So I think there's a number of factors that can sort of cause the incontinence and disturbance to bladder and bowel health.
Is there any symptom that is different from all of that, but quite unique in itself, or it's pretty much that basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is if there's any concerning things like any blood in the wee or the poo, again, that is, you know, any changes in bladder and bowel habits, you know, and I think there's, you know, anything concerning that's worrying. Again, it's not to sort of ignore that, it's to actually, you know, speak to the GP or the health professional and swiftly, you know, move forward with that, really, to get an assessment sorted and you know, look at what's causing that problem.
Have any men discussed with you about the workplace and the challenges of dealing with incontinence in the workplace at all?
I think it's sort of, you know, I think it's more around the disposal and sort of if they're using products and what have you. It's about having those adequate facilities. So, like I say, it's not necessarily about them disclosing with their colleagues that they've got a bladder or a bowel issue, but it's knowing that there is a toilet to hand, that, you know, that it's easily accessible. And when they get there, that the right facilities are in that room to actually, you know, sort of help them manage, you know, if they need to dispose of continence products, et cetera, that they can actually have those facilities. Because I think, you know, ladies' toilets tend to be better served with disposal facilities, but those facilities are not usually available in men's toilets. So I think it's more around the fact that, you know, it's about having the facilities to actually, you know, dispose of things in the toilet, really.
Is there anything else that employers can do to help you male that suffer from incontinence?
I think it's about, you know, ensuring that work environment is just, you know, has got the toilet facilities. You know, people have sort of told us that, you know, sometimes, you know, they've needed to speak maybe to sort of their employer about, maybe having a workstation move so that they're nearer to the toilet if they need easier toilet access, and you know, just to sort of make it less worrisome for them if you know, if they're having to dash to the, you know, to the toilet kind of thing. But I think it's about that importance of, you know, the facilities around the toilets kind of thing. And I think, and I know it, some men have actually said, you know, at work, you know, there might be sort of raising of awareness on conditions like diabetes or blood pressure and things like that. So even though it's not singling people out and what have you, but it's maybe about having more information about bladder and bowel health, you know, just generally, and maybe some information about where to go if there is an issue kind of thing with bladder and bowel issues.
Can the employer refer to occupational health as well to get involved?
Yes, yeah. So again, you know, the occupational health would be able to, you know, support people where you know, where that's available. Unfortunately, not everybody maybe have that service, but where that service is there, you know, that is definitely something, you know, that we would, you know, sort of when people chat to us, we might sort of say, is it, you know, have these conversations, you know, with work kind of things. Because I think, you know, if they've got that anxiety about going to work, and, you know, we're wanting to keep people independent working and what have you. So it's about everybody working together to help, you know, people, you know, remain independent and provide them with that privacy as well, really.
So occupational health can liaise with the employer after the assessment, let's say, and maybe recommend a number of things that can be done to support the person. Would that be right?
Yeah, definitely. To sort of help support them, you know, in the workplace.
Is there anything employers can do to help so people come forward about incontinence and talk about it?
I think, you know, often the most of our referrals tend to be that individuals themselves have stepped forward kind of thing. You know, I've not had lots of referrals, you know, sort of coming through to us from work, but I'm sure that will, you know, people will be encouraged to sort of seek help. But I think, again, it's about everybody understanding about bladder and bowel, you know, health kind of thing. And I think we're already saying that it's not something that's widely, you know, sort of talked about. So again, I think it's, you know, if people do have an issue, it's about them knowing where they can go privately within the workplace to talk to somebody, you know, about it. And, you know, if, you know, what support is needed to, you know, to help them with that.
Can you give examples, any case studies at all of people that you've helped in the past?
Oh, gosh, we've had so many, you know, people ring us. It might be, you know, sometimes it's people wanting to sort of ring up about product advice, you know, what products should I use and where can I obtain those? But I think the first question we will then ask is, have you actually ever spoken to anybody about this? Are you just self-purchasing, self-managing kind of thing? You know, so I think that's important that, you know, because somebody might be out there just buying products and not realise that, you know, help is available kind of thing. We get, like I say, from we get lots of men calling us. And again, I think it's that being able to talk to somebody because it's a confidential helpline, or they can sort of email. It's that they can be quite open with us and chat through about what their issues are kind of thing. And I think sometimes it's just offering that listening ear, and sort of talking through things and, you know, like I say, encouraging people to step forward, because in a lot of cases, you know, people haven't, you know, stepped forward. And I think where sometimes if people are managing an incontinence problem, they might think that there's only a pad, but there is more to managing incontinence than, you know, whilst they've got an important place, it's knowing that there are other products that are available that, you know, can help males manage, you know, incontinence kind of thing. So again, it's, you know, there's lots of information out there. I think it's about signposting people to sort of credible places where they can access that information. And also sometimes it gives a conversation opener for the GP if they're going to go back to the GP. And it might be that we say, right, let's formulate a list of questions and, you know, sort of help them. It's almost giving that permission for them to sort of say, oh, yeah, I do need to make an appointment with my GP. I'm not making a fuss. This is a real issue that I really need to do something about. And, you know, if we can maybe help them formulate a, you know, sort of, like I say, a list of questions to go to the GP with, sometimes that may make them feel a little bit more relaxed. And the fact that I've spoken to, you know, sort of one of the helpline services, and they've suggested I come along and have a chat, and these are the issues that I'm facing, kind of thing. And it becomes a bit of a conversation opener kind of thing for them to, you know, stepping forward.
What kind of products support people with incontinence?
So, I mean, obviously there's containment products, but then, you know, some people might do intermittent self-catheterization. There is, you know, there is for bowel management, there may be sort of irrigation systems. There are lots of, you know, sort of sheath type appliances for incontinence. But then there might be sort of needed things like aids to assist with toileting and that. I mean, there are so many products that are out there. And I think this is why it's valuable to sort of, you know, get that assessment. And I think when we think of doing an assessment, it might be a nurse or a doctor, but then there might be other professionals who get involved, like occupational therapists, because they can have a take on sort of, you know, products for toileting. You know, so there's lots of things, you know, out there to actually help manage. And I think it's working out what's right for that individual and sort of, you know, going, you know, taking the time to show them the various products, you know, that are available, if that's is what's needed for, from a management point of view.
Are men happy to use the products?
I think, you know, I wouldn't say happy is the right.
Yeah,
I think
or maybe yeah, not. Happy,
no. I think it's about being open to. I think, I suppose the thing is, it's about trying to find if we're going down the product line, if that's where we're going, kind of thing. I think it's trying to find that right product for that individual, because what suits one doesn't suit the next, kind of thing. You know, so I think, you know, it's about having that individual assessment and then looking at, well, these are the things that are available, and it's about probably opening up the choice and sort of saying, well, you know, these are the things that may help you manage the incontinence. So I think, you know, it's about them having that choice and awareness that there are lots of things out there to sort of help them.
Of course. I mean, I've spoken to men about incontinence pads, and as you can probably imagine, some people are okay, but some people are dead against it. They just will not use it. And I totally get that. And they say they've always been independent. They'll try their best, you know, to get to the toilet or however, where the other ways they manage it. And it's again about their dignity and being independent and that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing. Have you had similar kind of,
And I think it's about, you know, if we are using a product, that it's discreet, that it's not noted, that it's, you know, it's all those things. And I think that's where we're, you know, we've been, you know, with this campaign, part of the campaign that we're doing, we're sort of, you know, because it's sort of given us that valuable insight to, you know, the experience of people with bladder and bowel issues. And I think, you know, we're lucky to have Lewis Moody on board as our ambassador. And I think he's really passionate about sharing his personal views on how important it is to feel comfortable about speaking about bladder and bowel issues and about the, you know, the support that's available, because he's had sort of direct experience, you know, sort of himself, kind of thing, you know. So I think it's, again, it's another, you know, sort of point for discussion in terms of, you know, raising the awareness, really.
No, of course. Is there any other help people can get out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I say, I mean, there's the various third sector organisations, and they are working around these issues. And I would say sometimes third sectors might be that first point of contact. You know, we might be the first point of contact before anybody goes to the GP or the nurse. That's not always the case, but it can often be the case. And I think this is why, you know, certainly with us, we have a nurse-led helpline, and we have product information staff. And I'm sure the other organisations as well have a similar setup. But I think that is so important, because it's about giving that sort of you know, advice, working out what's roughly going on, and then we can sort of signpost people to the right NHS services. And I think in sometimes it might be that we can give practical advice that people can be self-help, self-managing in the meantime, you know, and what, you know, tips on, you know, self-management. And I think we sort of alluded earlier about people stopping drinking or, you know, avoiding eating. So it might be that we're giving advice on types of fluids to have, fluid intake, you know, sort of about diet, avoiding constipation, you know, some simple self-help tips that may just, they might actually make a bit of a difference as well and might help improve things, you know, sort of for individuals. So I think, you know, as well as, I think we're there to complement the NHS services and sort of provide that additional support, because I think for people who are, we also have people contacting us who are also under NHS services, but they still want to be able to talk to somebody and, you know, they're happy with the service that they're getting, but they still need that additional point of contact to speak to somebody, you know, about the bladder or bowel issue kind of thing, you know. And I think that's really important that we all offer that service, you know, for people.
Of course. And you mentioned earlier about support groups. So are there many support groups out there to help?
Yeah, so some of the, you know, organisations do have, you know, either forums and support groups. And I think, again, depending on, you know, sort of what the issue is kind of thing, some of them can be very specific and that kind of thing. So, you know, there is a wealth of, you know, information. And I think, between us all, we're very good at sort of signposting to each other. If somebody was to contact, you know, to sort of, you know, sometimes people, for example, might say, look, I really want to go into a support forum or what have you. So we would hopefully be able to signpost people to, you know, those groups for them to access. Because everything's not always immediately visible, is it? Even though we think the internet has everything, it's not always immediately visible there for everybody. So, again, part of what we do is signposting out to people, you know, to services like that.
And the support groups, is it basically a few people getting in the room together to have a talk about some of the challenges or...?
It may be that, you know, some support groups may be sort of closed social media sort of groups. You know, some of the, you know, sort of organisations might actually have patient forums that are sort of online kind of thing. And some do offer actually face-to-face, you know, sort of meetings. So again, depending, you know, it varies kind of thing. But I think, you know, there's quite a lot of information out there for people to access into.
If someone... I suppose the other question is, if someone hasn't got access to internet or can't use the internet,
yeah,
and they can't get out much.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is there like a phone service at all?
Yeah. And I think that's, we've certainly for us, and I think I'm sure some of the other services are the same. We certainly have our phone line. We would send information out by post, you know, because as you quite rightly say, not everybody, you know, goes onto the interweb or has those, you know, sort of facilities. So again, you know, it's important that we can send, you know, that information out, you know, to people.
And how's the campaign going that helps, you know, highlight the subject of male incontinence?
Yeah, I think the campaign is going really well. You know, we've had information in the media, there's been some articles gone into sort of, you know, newspaper and what have you. So I think it's about, again, just trying to nationally raise that, you know, profile, not just amongst the public, but amongst professionals as well. And I think this is just the start. And I think, you know, hopefully this will, you know, sort of...
Is this
continue.
The tester, you being on here with me?
I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing some wonderful work in the bladder and bowel, you know, continence world. And I think, you know, we're part of that. And I think, you know, anything we can all be doing to raise... you know, that profile, raise, you know, the issues. In this case, it's looking at sort of males and incontinence kind of thing, you know. But I think across all spectrums, it's about us, you know, raising that awareness. And I think certainly, you know, having ambassadors on board to who've maybe had personal experience them themselves, as I've mentioned earlier, I think that's really important to us as well, you know, because I think, you know, certainly for us in where we sit, we sort of talk to people every day, no matter who they are, just to let them know that they're not alone. And I think that's really, really important as well. So, you know, I think, you know, the campaign is really important. You know, I think the survey that was done has really sort of highlighted, you know, what we would like to sort of, what changes we would like to make going forward. And I think there's quite a lot of momentum behind that.
Brilliant. Are there any celebrity ambassadors at all? Or
so I think I'd mention we have Lewis Moody, who was the England rugby cap. Yes.
Sorry,
yes.
You did mention
And he's very open about sharing his personal views because he's previously suffered incontinence himself and how that affected him, his work. You know, and he's been, you know, very open about that. And I think very encouraging to sort of for men to step forward and not to, you know, put up with the problem kind of thing, you know. So I think that is so important, you know, to have that really.
Absolutely. If people want to find out more information about incontinence, is there a website or a place they can get in touch with yourself or other your team?
We have a website, and that's www.bbuk.org.uk. So, you know, people can go on there, and there's information on the helpline, which is a confidential service, and that's either telephone or email. And there's also some free downloadable resources on there, and that's, you know, ever building kind of thing. So I think, you know, that is a, you know, point of contact where people can come to, and they can speak to either one of the nurses or the product information officers, or it might be that they just want to go on the website and the information's there for them to, you know, to access, kind of thing.
Fantastic. Karen, thank you so much for today. It's been really helpful. And I hope the campaign goes well as well. Okay.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. You know where you can find me, at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.